So this series of talks is about Mahamudra. And the structure will be like this. Tonight we'll be talking about the meditations for Mahamudra. There are special meditations to develop Mahamudra. And what Mahamudra means, we'll get into that later, okay? And then tomorrow, at the same time, at 6, we will be going into the physical practice of Mahamudra, the asana. So tomorrow is more, how to say, it's the theoretical part of the physical part, okay? So we're not going to do yoga in the pews, but we'll be talking about how the physical part of Mahamudra works. So today is the mental part, and then tomorrow is the physical part of Mahamudra, okay? And the theory of it. And then the following Monday, a week from this Monday, we'll be actually doing the physical exercises together, anybody who wants to, okay? And I want to emphasize that it doesn't matter if you've ever done yoga before, it doesn't matter what your age is, it doesn't matter what your physical condition is. Mahamudra is not an absolute posture that you have to get into, it's a relative posture. Meaning, you go to your own personal stretching thing and stay there, and that's enough for you. You see what I mean? So it works no matter what your physical condition is. I personally am not a physically oriented person. I used to fail the president's fitness test every year in grade school. I couldn't do a single pull-up. And they would just make me hang there, like torture me. And everybody would have time to laugh, you know, and then I would just drop down, you know. And so, you know, the practice is important for anybody. You don't have to be physically oriented. You can be a complete nerd or bookworm or couch potato. Mahamudra is still good for you, okay? The asana is still good for you. So that's the general idea of these talks. Tonight we'll do the inner Mahamudra meditations, which are very amazing. And then tomorrow we'll talk about the theory of the physical exercise called Mahamudra. And then a week from Monday, I believe it's in this space, are we confirmed on that? Yeah. On a different floor, which has sort of a gym or something, we'll be doing the actual asanas together. Probably you want to sign up for that or something. Probably it's a limited space. So, you know, you'll want to talk to the organizers. Can I say who are up here in the front row? Is that okay?
Ram's right.
Say again?
They announced it.
info@godstow.com.
Org.
Register at God, info at Godstow, GODSTOW.org. Am I right?
And there's flyers.
And you register, and there are flyers in the back that you can do. Okay. So tonight we'll be going to the Mahamudra meditations. These come down from Lord Buddha. They began in the Buddha's time in a scripture called Tingenze Gyalpo or Samadhi Raja. And in that book, it says that the mudra is the nature of all things. And we'll be talking more about that. Then the lineage comes down through Nagarjuna, who lived about 18 centuries ago, and taught about the meaning of emptiness. And we'll talk more about that. Then it comes down through a number of great Indian teachers, especially Chandrakirti, around 650, and then reaches Naropa about 1,000 years ago. Naropa taught it to Marpa, who was a Tibetan, who was out of shape, okay? He was known for his belly, alright? He was a farmer, he liked to drink beer. He had a beer belly. Like he did Mahamudra. And so you can too. And then he taught it to his famous disciple, Milarepa. And then it comes down to our current time. There's several major lineages of Mahamudra in Tibet. And the lineages are quite different. The presentation of Mahamudra is quite different. So you may have heard Mahamudra, or you may have studied Mahamudra with someone, or you may have read a little bit about it. And I think you might, a certain number of people who have heard about it before, had a teaching about it before, it might strike them that this Mahamudra is not what they heard, okay? There's a specific lineage that has come down through the Dalai Lamas and the Panchen Lamas. Okay, so that's what we're going to be going through tonight. It's very much a lineage which came down through the Dalai Lamas and the Panchen Lamas. The great book on Mahamudra that we study in the monastery was taught by the first Panchen Lama. Okay, and so you'll be hearing a specific lineage of Mahamudra, which is very much an inner practice tonight. And then it comes down to the great teachers of the Dalai Lama's, teacher, who is Kyabje Tito Rinpoche. And then comes down to his two disciples, Geshe Thupten Rinchen and Ken Rinpoche, Geshe Losang Tachi. And they taught us Mahamudra. So that's the lineage that you're getting. Okay, and it's a very specific lineage and special. I think you'll like it. But it may not, I think it's much more, how to say it, it's much more detailed than the usual Mahamudra teachings you might have heard. The point is the same. I personally like a lot of detail. I like to, you know, I like to be taught carefully, like almost like, how do you say it, an instruction book for a lawnmower or something. I like someone to teach it to me like that. And this is very much that way. It's very detailed. Some of the lineages of Mahamudra, they stick you in a room, they say something weird to you, and they leave for 6 weeks, you know? And that works for certain kinds of people. And then this works for certain kinds of people. And they're both important, and they're both beneficial. What you're getting tonight is the lawnmower instruction manual version, okay? Then tomorrow, we'll be working from mainly the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. Nobody knows exactly when it was written, maybe 400 years ago. And this is, I think it's one of the most amazing books on yoga ever written. We originally were turned on to it by Sharon and David, who are here tonight, our dear teachers. And we studied it and translated it in 3-year retreat. And then we've been fortunate enough to study in India with people and have the transmission from people. So tomorrow we'll be working from an old Sanskrit book about the physical exercises of Mahamudra. And then the following Monday we'll be grunting and sweating together, but not too hard. And there's an excellent dinner afterwards, okay? So no one's going to suffer at the asana practice, okay? That dinner, by the way, is a fundraiser for Godstow Retreat Center. And they offer beautiful programs up in Connecticut. It's like an hour and a half from here. And every time we're in town, we like to do some kind of fundraiser for them because they sort of undercharge, and then they don't have money to fix the roof and stuff like that. So Monday is free, the asana part is free, but we encourage you to stay afterwards for a nice, I think it's raw vegetable dinner, which sounded really bad to me, but I tried it, and it's nearly as good as the donuts and stuff like that. It's probably healthier. So, but anyway, it'll be a nice dinner and fun. So I encourage you to stay after for that. And then we'll charge you, you know, something. And the money all goes to keep this retreat center going. Just a little bit about the theory, and then Kristina is going to be guiding us through the various, there are 6 Mahamudra meditations that we do traditionally in this lineage. And I'll just say one more word about how they work. Like, why do you do a Mahamudra meditation on Saturday night, and then Sunday you're talking about some kind of physical exercises, and then Monday you expect us to get down on this mat and and do something. It's, what's the connection, you see? It's like if they had told you in church when you were a kid or in the synagogue, you know, the first half will have a prayer service, and then the second half, everybody's going to get out in the aisles and do push-ups, you know? And that will get you to heaven faster, you see? And that's totally foreign to us, you know, as Americans. That whole idea is very foreign to us. That you should do some inner practice, meditation, and then you should follow it up with some push-ups, and that's gonna get you to spiritual. It's gonna get you to heaven faster, okay? And here you get into what we call the inner and outer methods, and the secret and open methods, okay? And we can talk about that. Normally you don't get this training until you've been through about 20 years of study. Normally only Geshe's are eligible to go to Tantra College. And then,
That's cute. Nice.
You're getting good. It's like any of the nervous is being caused, you know? Yeah. So, if you've ever seen it. So what's the connection? Normally you don't get to study this for a long time. You don't teach Mahamudra. There's two Mahamudras. One is open, when you can teach it anybody. And then one is secret. And it's so secret that there was a tradition in Tibet, that our tradition of Mahamudra, that we didn't have a tradition of Mahamudra. You see, people would say, Dalai Lamas, they don't have a Mahamudra. You know, Panchen Lamas, they don't have a Mahamudra. The book was so secret that most people thought there wasn't a Mahamudra practice. So, we have taught in the last 7 weeks, we have taught the open Mahamudra practice, which is not secret. And then tomorrow we'll start a secret practice. So why are we doing a secret practice in a big room full of people? We had a chance to speak to our lamas about, you know, we learned yoga after a long period of study. And it's taught privately to small groups of people. And you don't ask, they tell you, you know? They tell you, come to the room, it's in your car. You say, for what? And they say, we're going to teach you yoga because you're ready. You know, and then they say, well, who's going to teach you? This was my novel teacher, okay? And he says, I'm a yoga teacher. You know? And I said, I've known you for 25 years. You're no yoga master. He says, I'm the yoga master. You see, that's how secret it is in the monastery. And they put us into a room, and they train us in the asanas, in the yoga. And then another lama went through. And they were kicked out for 9 days, and to make a long story short, we went to some very good classes at Jivamukti and other places, and we were struck by how similar the lineage was, like how well the lineage must have been kept. The Tibetan lineage and the Indian lineage split 1,000 years ago. They were split, they were cut off from each other by the Mughal invasions of India. Indian yoga went underground, Tibetan yoga flourished in the Himalayas. There was almost no contact for 1,000 years. But we walked into a Jivamukti yoga class, and we were very struck by the similarities. So we went back to our lamas and we reported to them, you know that secret practice he taught us after 20 years? Yeah. You know the yoga stuff you taught us from Joseph Kaplan's magician then? Yeah, I know, what about it? Well, you see, it's not so secret anymore, you know? And they're like, oh, did somebody teach it to somebody? Did you meet somebody? I said, well, actually, according to CNN, it's about 30 million people are here right now. And I told this story many times. We expected some kind of negative reaction from the lamas. We thought they would say, oh, the secret is getting corrupted, people shouldn't be doing that, people are irresponsibly spreading these high teachings. And Lala likes to come up and cry. And he was crying from happiness, you know. And you were like, aren't you upset? Don't you have any, you know, when you get something secret after 20 years, you'd like someone to tell you, you're the only one who has it, you know. And so he said, no, this is something wonderful in your country, you know, like, people don't hear the word yoga or mahamudra unless they have practiced it for many lifetimes. You see? People don't even hear the word. If you walk down the street and you see Y-O-G-A up on a sign, then you practice yoga for many lifetimes. I was in a yoga center in New York.
It's called Yoga Sutra.
Mm-hmm. Really tough place. I was on this side of the window, I was looking up while the guy was twisting me around. And yoga backwards almost looks like agony. It's funny, I was stupid. Yeah, agony. And this was last week, you know. And, you know, and it's very beautiful. He said, people don't see the word agony or yoga on a window unless they practiced it in many lifetimes. What you have in your countries now is huge numbers of people who have practiced it in the past are being born in the same country. And I said, no, Bishop, it's not like that. His name is Gimenez Rinpoche. He's second to Dalai Lama. He's now the next Dalai teacher. And he said, I said, Rinpoche, it's not really like that. People just do yoga to lose weight, actually. You know, or relax, you know, or get some exercise. I mean, it's not like, I don't think they have yogis, you know, in their past life. He said, no. There are yogis who forgot they are yogis. They are tantricas who forgot that they are tantricas. He was very like that, you know. He said, they have this deep seeds from their past lives. They think they're going to lose weight, but they're going to sense some higher purpose, something higher. You see? And then you saw the word Mahamudra somewhere on a postcard, and then you thought, oh, I'll go listen, you know? That's because you have practiced Mahamudra in countless lifetimes. You have done it in countless lifetimes. And then you're attracted to it, and maybe you don't know why. And, you know, this whole thing is like somebody's new to you. Sounds new to you, but it's not. You've done it in countless lifetimes. Okay. So, they told us it's not only okay, but you should make great efforts in your country to now open these teachings and help people with these teachings, you see? So they were very excited. They like sent us forth. They said, go for it, you know? So tomorrow is the first time that we will start teaching the inner practice of Mahamudra. I think that's enough on that. And I think Christina will start us through the meditations. And there will be alternating explanations with actual meditations. The point of this practice this evening is to give you something to take home. Okay, so these are actual meditations that you should try to remember. The reading will guide you, and then take it home with you and practice it. Okay? So this is what's going to do the first Mahamudra meditation with this, okay? So I didn't we had asked the question, but we didn't answer about that vision of you being in church as here or synagogue, and your rabbi or your priest telling you, okay, we're done with the prayers, now go out and do push-ups in the aisle. You know, and it seems incongruous for us because of how we grow up. In the Mahamudra practice, in this lineage, you work on the body and you work on the mind together. You see? They call it working from the inside and working from the outside. When you finish your 20 years of training as a patient, then you're allowed to go to the Tantra College. And our teachers are for the Adam of the Tantra College. And then you get trained. First you get an initiation. First you go through some kind of entrance into the divine world, what you call a mandala, right? So they will take you into the divine world. They will take you in it and show you what you could be. You see, if you do this well, if you learn these practices well, this is where you could live. You could live in this divine world. They take you into the divine world. But you can't stay there. Not because they don't want you to, but because you don't have the power to stay there. And you come along and then you say, okay, now I have to learn and practice to stay there. And you make certain pledges. You know, like you swear to keep certain commitments. Otherwise the process won't work. So for the first day, you have to take certain commitments. If you keep them, you have a chance of entering the divine world on your own and staying there for the forever. And if you don't, then you won't be able to. And that's something you have to do. Like the master can't do that for you. You have to know the commitments, and you have to keep your commitments, or else you, there's no way you could ever enter that place again. Somebody teaches you one, okay? This is going to be teaching you one, okay? Just for good luck, raise your left hand. You're not promising, okay? It's just good luck. Say chi,
na,
pa,
na,
so,
be.
One more time. Chi,
na,
pa,
na,
so,
be.
Okay. We just decided to see before, I'm not going to. Maybe good design. Chi is outside. Nan means inside. Ta means magical weapons. So what Brad means, I promise to follow both of them. Okay? I will from now on. You know, now I'm ready for one of the deeper teachings. I promise I will follow both the I and the inner weapons. So what are the inner weapons? These are the six meditations that she's learning. Google is really designed, it takes a lot more than that, honestly. You have to get it through, you have to continue to change something like that. They are listening and reading and thinking, but they need a teacher's understanding. And then our methods are what you call yoga in this country, right? So physical exercises and also special breathing exercises. So what's the connection between special kinds of prayer or meditation and then some kind of physical exercise? How can doing push-ups be related to praying in the church? You see, and this is something you need to know about the nature of your being, okay? Like your being is both physical and mental, right? You have a physical body and you have a mind. And in Tibet, the two are much different than they are here. They don't equate the mind with the brain. Like when you say, I think so, they don't go like this. They don't say, I think so. They go, I think so. They point to the heart, see? They don't think of the brain as a center of thought. They think of it. They say like, God, you really upset me, my mind. And they go like this, see? Whoever's right, I don't know who's right. I'm not going to argue, you know. I know it's a bad chakra at all. You can't think of it. You know, I believe that. It doesn't matter who's right. The fact is that two great civilizations think it's in a different place, which makes me think it's invisible. You see, you can't point to your mind. You see, your mind is stretched to your call. If you squeeze that, you have a feeling. Your mind feels something, right? If I see someone get up and walk out before the break, I get my feelings get better, you see? And they're like 100 feet away, or 100 yards away, you see? And things outside of me can affect my mind stretches always to the back of the room because I can see that far. And what happens out there is it feels really bad. So in a way, I stretch to the end of the room, and I can imagine the pain in my I heard about our drawing today. All I heard on the radio was our drawing today. I don't know what I'm doing. It's all just the same thing. It's all just the guys and bees screaming for help. And I'm not there. My body's not there. But my mind is there. You know, I know what happened. I feel bad. It affects me. In a way, I stretch across the globe. You see what I mean? So where the mind is very hard to determine. In Tibet, they would say that if a person unleashed a nuclear weapon in his church now, every body would evaporate, but every mind would be sitting here. You see? Because you can't affect the mind. You can't burn the mind. You can't split the mind. You see? Mind is different stuff. And body is different stuff. But we have all. Right? And yet, if you can, there's a huge debate amongst the people. Are your body and mind interconnected? Yes. Why is it so? Look at those people who are drinking so much beer, you know? What about it? The beer is physical. The beer affects physical body. Right. But it also makes them stupid, you know? The word for beer at the time is yoche. It means stupid man. So it's a powerful debate. It's the alcohol at the time is called yoche. It makes you stupid. And so there must be a connection between body and mind. If you drink too many beer, you get crazy nerves, you get stupid, right? So there must be a connection between your body and your mind. And Mahabuddha takes advantage of that fact, okay? The Mahabuddha meditations are always focused on your own thoughts, okay? The Mahabuddha meditations always take as their object your own thoughts. There are meditations you can do where you close your eyes and think of a beautiful light. You can close your eyes and think of a benign angel. You know, you can close your eyes and think of love. You can close your eyes and think about compassion. But in Mahabuddha, the object is always the same. You close your eyes and you focus on your thoughts. Okay? Now, there's sort of a high-quality Mahabuddha meditation, there's sort of a useless Mahabuddha meditation. High quality means you focus on your thoughts, but you try to find a meaning. You think hard about your thoughts. Like you're focusing on your thoughts, which keeps you bright. You see? If you're focusing on some kind of picture you saw with your eyes closed, you can start to doze off. But if you're watching your own mind, it's sort of a lively event, and it keeps you fresh. You see? It's a trick. Mahabuddha is always focused on your own thoughts. At the first level, you always focus on your own feelings. See, how do I feel right now? And that keeps you right. And you can stay on the meditation for 15, 30 minutes, an hour. See, you're always focusing on your own mind. That's what the Mahabuddha meditation focuses on. The Mahabuddha yoga practices focus on your inner awareness. In Tibet they call Lu, in Sanskrit they call Brahma, in Chinese they call Qi, right? But it's the inner energy flowing through your body, through certain physical channels. It's a subtle form of energy, but it's still physical, okay? It's still part of your physical body, okay? And inside your body, in certain channels, your thoughts and its inner winds are connected. That's where the beer goes to make it stupid. You see what I mean? The beer goes to the physical body. It's ingested into the physical body. Then it leaks into this channel. And it affects the prana, it disturbs the prana. And because the prana is always linked to your thoughts, then that makes you stupid. You see? That's where the body and mind meet. It's where it is these channels inside your body. There are these subtle winds, subtle energies, chi, prana, lung, whatever you call them. And they are joining to your thoughts. And that's a beautiful place for body and mind interface. You know, amazing. Frontier. You know, that's the next frontier we will discover. That's where we have to do our work. It's at that border where the subtle body meets your subtle thoughts. And then Mahamudra goes to Samatha. Mahamudra is in the Dhanah. And meditation affects your thoughts. And then the Asana, the yoga practice, affects the winds. You see? And all yoga was ever to do that. That's all yoga was ever meant to do. It does make you slim. It does make you stronger. It does make you happy and it helps you speak. But the reason it was first revealed, right, is that it affects your mind. It changes the reasons in your mind. So I always think of it as a plumber who's trying to open a pipe that's stuck under a sink, right? I used to do it. For 8 years, people say, how do you know all this stuff? I was in a monastery. I served 8 years in a special capacity. Oh, what was that special capacity? Well, I was the dishwasher. You know? I think that's where the power comes from, actually. It doesn't necessarily. But I had lots of experience in stuck feet, you see? So, how do you work with a stuck feet? Well, you can put Drano in it, or you can get a little room, right? And you can try to get your arm into the pipe. Or you can just take a sink or an arm and go under the sink and start banging on the pipe, you know? The sink is a lot less elegant, but sometimes it works better. Sometimes the Drano works better. But what definitely works well is to use them both together. And when you take that bow in the monastery, chill up a little bit, I promise to work from the inside and the outside. You're saying all you use is thick and all you use is low root together. Okay? So that means I will use asana practices, yoga practices, to bang on the pipe from the outside. If it's not elegant, then it takes longer. It takes like an hour and a minute or something, it's sweaty, it's very physical. But in a way, it's comforting, isn't it? You can make progress every day. You see, it's measurable. It's so hard to measure your meditation. How's your meditation going? I don't know. Is it better than your yoga? I don't know. You see, meditation is hard to measure. Asanas, even though they're not as effective, on the channels, they're very concrete, right? It's comforting for people. You know, I could do a headstand. I couldn't do one last year. You know, I'm good at somewhere. And so we need that kind of thing. And it also does certain things in the channels that it's hard to communicate. Then in the meditation, you work from the inside. That's the word of the So, Krishna is going to do the next word of the okay?
We're going to talk about what the word Mahamudra actually means. Say Maha.
Maha.
Mudra.
Mudra.
Maha means great, right? It comes from a root of Maha. Which means to be great. And you see that in words, MAG words like magnificent or magnify or magnitude. It comes into Inisha, doesn't that? And also, maximum comes in as MAX. And we also find common Sanskrit words that we know, like Mahayana, is Maha, you know, the great vehicle. And Mahatma, like Mahatma Gandhi, the great being. Right? Then Mudra comes from an Indo-European word, Mukh. Which means to seal. And we get the word mute or mum from that, which means to seal your lips, you know, to be silent. And also the word mystic. Because they sealed their eyes, they often had their eyes closed in meditation. So that's my job for the word.
I'm going to finish the word, then we'll take a break. The word in Tibetan for Mahamudra is Chakra Chembo. Say Chakra?
Chakra.
Chembo.
Chembo.
Okay, can you write that? It's
Paya
the Chembo. Gotcha. No. And I wanted to go to Chembo to the Chakra, okay? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chakra. Paya the Chembo. R, G, Y, A.
Yeah.
Mudra means a seal, okay? And in different senses, okay? For example, there are special books in Tibet called Kanyama. Say Kanyama? Kanyama means a book which has been sealed shut. And we had teams, like in Ladakh, looking for special yoga texts in the Tibetan monasteries that have been there 1,000 years. And John Brady's been there. We're going to show some film about him next week. But some of the books I've got now, they take a piece of cloth, they wrap it, then they seal wax on it, and then they put a seal on it. And no one can open this book unless they're at another monastery or something like that. Like, it's too heavy, it's too deep for people. It's called a sealed book. Kagyana means a book which might be opened once every 100 years or something, by someone who's ready to read it. So that's one meaning. You see, you start to get the sense of seal. Also the ring, a signet ring. In the old days, I don't know, I always think of Genghis Khan, 700-800 years ago. He was living in China, right? And his troops took over Moscow, the Middle East. They reached Vienna. Outside of Vienna, in one day, they killed the whole staff of men, Vietnamese troops. We would always see Mongolia, you see? But they got a message from home. It took 3 years to get a message to the front line. It was like this, you see? And they got a message that Khan died, Genghis Khan died, when? 3 years ago. And they just turned around and went home. They got their attention. You see? It's like they just went home. Except for the comics, that's another story. But how do you know the messages from the Khan? You see, there would be a stamp, there would be a seal, you would put wax on the message, and then only the Khan had a special reading, and he would press his reading into a seal, and then you would know that this message was from the king or from the Khan. So that's why seals are so big in China, people collect them in Korea. They're very valuable, ancient seals that people use to stamp or impress the mouth with a seal ringing, you see. So what's that got to do with this practice that we're talking about? What's Mahamudra got to do with that? There are many, many explanations of it. Here's the classic one, as far as Mahamudra thoughts. Okay, we're going to be talking tonight about Mahamudra thoughts, meditations. And then Sunday we talk about Mahamudra winds, right? Prana. So if you're talking about thoughts, then the mudra, what's the seal? What's it got to do with the seal? You see? And it's this being. It's called Kata Vichayasi in Tibetan. There are certain concepts which are, I don't know how to say, they seal the world. You see? There are certain ideas that are underneath everything. Nothing gets past this idea. Everything in the world is controlled by a certain principle, okay? And that principle is like a seal. Nothing in the world ever happens without the permission of this principle. You see, there's a certain principle, there's a certain idea, and nothing in the world can happen without its seal of approval. Get it? Mudra. You see? So what is this principle? It's emptiness. Okay? It's the idea of emptiness. So mudra, in Mahamudra, the seal, you see, is emptiness. Emptiness doesn't mean not thinking about anything. Emptiness doesn't mean nothing matters. Emptiness doesn't mean you close your eyes and think black. Emptiness doesn't even mean that you close your eyes and focus on your feelings. Because that, you've been doing your whole life, and it didn't get you anywhere. You see, I mean, like there are some Mahamudra lineages that sort of fall short, that got half of it. It's supposed to be focused on your mind, yeah, but you're supposed to think something wrong. You see, you don't just watch your mind. My mom used to say, rabbits watch their minds. You know, like, everybody's watching their mind. It has to be a certain kind of thing you're looking for in your mind. You see, you focus on your mind, you focus on your feelings, but you're looking for something special. You see, you're looking for something. What are you looking for? Emptiness. Okay, why? Because that's the principle that underlies everything. You know, we've been giving business talks. We went to Kaplan, I can't pronounce it. Thaler? These are the Aflac duck people. Okay, like, I don't know who Aflac duck is, but I learned. Okay, Aflac duck is the most famous, it's the most profitable advertising campaign in the last 10 years or something. And this company just reached $500,000 a year, right? And the two ladies who run it, they run it from a book that we wrote called Diamond Cutter. They started the company and they run it from this book that we wrote. What's the book about? It's about emptiness. You see? So if you get this principle, if you understand this principle, past which nothing can go, this is a seal, you see? The life is sealed. The universe is sealed. You can't do anything here powerful unless you understand emptiness. So in essence, you know, we used it to start a company that one of the founders of our company in New York. It's a $250 million company now. How? Just get to the root of things, emptiness. Okay, so Mahamudra means be emptiness. Mudra means emptiness. It seals all things. All things are marked with emptiness. If you know how to work with emptiness, you can take a company. This lady started this company in her apartment. Okay? And now it's $500 million. Okay? She's just a regular lady, but she used emptiness. She got it. And she used it. It's a key to everything. And we hear that very talk, it's really fun. Because I never heard of this lady. She mentioned a book on the Today Show. And somebody heard it and they asked us to come talk. So it's like that. If you understand Buddha, emptiness, you can do anything. You see? It's a principle which underlies all things. Now why is it called Maha? Maha means big means you can get the best stuff out of Buddha. Okay? Anything you want. You can succeed. If you know mudra, you can succeed at anything. Okay, that's a big mudra. Okay, that's a really big mudra. That's a special mudra. You see, so it means like big time mudra. Okay, so maha means big time mudra. Why? Because it's the big time result out of it. If you want a big company, you can have a big company. At later on, you figure you can only sit in one chair at a time. Your butt can only be in one chair at a time. Later on, you want something bigger than that. Yeah? And then you go on to spiritual goals and stuff like that. But it's okay to get rich first. That's fine. It's not a bad thing. Okay? So you can use Mahamudra. Mahamudra means that. The big mudra. The bigger thing is. Why? Because emptiness is the biggest stuff. Okay? So that's what the word Mahamudra means. Now in yoga, in the asanas, there are 10 special practices called mudras. And that means something else. Those are special locks, like chin lock, abdominal lock, perineal lock, you know, different locks. Mudra, in the sense of sealing parts of your body, contains the prana. Why would you want to move the prana around in your body? Get this. With certain physical exercises, you can force prana to trigger the direct perception of emptiness. Get it? So that there's this deep connection between these two practices. Krishnadas has been talking about a meditation, which is meant to help you see emptiness. But if you do the exercises at the same time, which are called mudras, you can see emptiness. And then you get long practice. Okay? Then you get big time to start practicing. And so you use the inner breath to see mudra and emptiness. And then at the same time, you bang on the pipe from the outside. Very crude, but it works. And you do certain locks, mudras in your body. And then they help you see the emptiness directly. Okay? There's a higher mudra, there's a secret mudra. Chakra, mudra, also means your spiritual partner. It's a word for your spiritual partner. It's a very high practice, Mahamudra, a very high manifesting emptiness directly. The woman has the yin power, the woman has the feminine energy, the man has the masculine energy. And if you can stay together, and I don't mean like people think sexually, stuff like that, it's not like that. If you can stay together with a person, a spiritual partner, and if you make it your life's goal, if you make it your life's work to work together, do yoga together, study together, meditate together, eat together, everything, to balance those three energies inside your own body, you see, everything as a partner. That's also called chakra. That's also called mudra. Your partner is called your mudra in the higher teachings. So it's a very deep practice. It's a very beautiful practice. And it has the same goal. Work together, balance the two energies, man and woman, and then you can see emptiness directly. You see, it's a very powerful practice. And you know all the movies you ever saw? The guy gets the girl, right? Why is that? A lama would say there's a deep desire in the human spirit to balance the two energies. You see? It's one of the deepest goals. It's not for physical gratification, it's not for emotional gratification, it's not for financial purposes, it's not for family necessarily. It's that there's this deep desire to balance the two energies in the body. When those two energies balance perfectly, you see emptiness directly. You see? When they balance well, if you can balance your male and your female energies, and everybody has both, then you can see emptiness directly. What's the purpose of that? I'll tell you that you can have your $25 cupcakes on it. No, just kidding. When the two energies are balanced in your body, when you see emptiness directly, the prana moves into certain parts of your body and transform the body. They transform the body. The body, when you see people who look better because they're doing yoga, that's like 1,000% of what the goal is, you know? If you can do these practices properly, your body begins to change into life. Okay? And I'm comfortable to talk about it because you've all been doing it for countless lives, okay? If you were here tonight, if you heard the word agony, I mean yoga, you've been doing it. You just don't remember perhaps, but you've been doing it, you've been doing these practices, you're attracted to these practices. And the goal of these practices is to balance the two energies within you, and then the body begins to change into life. As it changes more and more, when it finishes changing, there's a millisecond delay, okay? Like you don't get to go where you're supposed to go for 1 millisecond. The energy balance. In the next second, you are standing on countless worlds. Okay? So yoga is finished, you finish, the energies combine. The next moment, you are standing on countless worlds, helping countless people. You are the Jesus or the Buddha of that world. You see? You will be. That's what you were meant to be. You know, why was I born, you know? What was I born for? What's the point?
Am I just supposed to eat and sleep and work myself to death? Am I supposed to collect stuff? And then I die, I give it to my kids. They spend it a year. Come on. Come on. Don't kick yourself. Don't kick yourself. What's that about working for my kids? Come on. You do it with your parents' money, they're going to do it with your money. It'll be gone in a year. All that 25 years of slaving for the kids. Come on. Don't want it, right? Do you work? Is that what I'm meant to do? Work hard, collect things, die, leave them to the kids, they blow it in a year. What's the story? You see? You know that's not why you're here. You have a sense. You have a deep instinct. I'm supposed to be something more than that. I'm supposed to be Maha. I'm a big time, somehow. Somewhere I'm a big time. The point is, when you balance these energies, when you achieve Maha Buddha, then you become an angel. And all those pictures of angels are not just made up, they're for real. You become that. You must become that. You will become that. You are on a track to become that. That's what you're supposed to be doing right now. Okay, you can have a regular job, have a regular family, you don't have to wear a regular suit, okay? Not the point. Within the context of your life, regular job, regular family, regular life, you have to become an angel. When you change, when the body changes, you are on countless planets, you are having countless people. You are the main, I don't know, you are the main spiritual force in that planet, and you are helping these people. That's what you are meant to do. That's what the practice is all about, moving into the people, okay? But you can't get there unless you have any questions. So, Krishna and I will be sitting down here, and if you haven't had a chance to talk to us, we might not see you even though actually it is some of our meetings. Please feel free to come on. I need to see
John Brady,
Marty Whiting, Renee, if you're here during this spring. So we'll take a break. I think we'll miss a minute. Please come back. What's the matter? Okay, I'm just going to talk. In the Tibetan tradition and in the Indian tradition, Mahabuddha is never taken out of context. So what does that mean? We were recently in the Bahamas, and we were teaching at a very famous yoga center called Shishimanda Center. And I had asked the main Swami, which is the main teacher there. He's actually very good, but he's worked with high masters for 30 years of his life. So he's a really fine teacher of the yoga path. He's amazing, and Swami Swaminathan. So I was curious to know how big is Mahamudra in your lineage, right? So I asked him, would you be willing to call me to introduce me to how you teach Mahamudra? And he said, well, I'll talk tomorrow. You know, the next day he wasn't there. And then I saw him again, I asked him again. And he said, well, maybe we can do it the next day. You know, the next day he wasn't there. And then the last day we were there, I had Swamiji, you know, and he kind of said he would do it. And he said, well, okay, maybe come in the afternoon. In the afternoon, we were ready to him, and we got word that he left the island. He was somewhere else. You know, and so we're like assuming that it's not going to happen, you know. And then suddenly, it's just before dinner, we get this message. We were actually in a yoga class. Someone comes to the yoga class, passes me about, told me they can see you know, and we went over there, and we sat, we did proper, you know, requests and teaching, and we made an offering, and then we all sat down, and he started to teach us about Luther. And he went on for like 2 or 3 hours, and he never got to love, okay? Like, he never talked about it. The Mahamudra yoga exercise. It was all about how you need to prepare properly. You see, the preparation you need to practice this higher practice. And we did a really, and then he told us how you get there, the preparation, then a little bit about what to do, and then he went on to the conclusion, and then he said, okay, come on, next. And that was it, you know. So, then the Tibetan monks will do the same thing. You see, there's a very famous phenomenon from our monastery Saturday. 300 years ago, he was teaching Mahamudra. It's one of the most important texts on Mahamudra. And you know, we thought it would be nice to give to you, because it's from our monastery. And it's very rare, but we got a copy, and we started to work on it. It's 60 pages long. We started to translate it. We got to page like 30. And he's not talking about Mahamudra. You see, halfway through the book, he's not talking about Mahamudra. And what it means is that to succeed at Mahamudra, you need to do the preparation. You need to know the preparation. There are certain spiritual preparations that you need. If you don't have these preparations, can't do Mahamudra. Okay? And it won't succeed. I'm just going to talk about the first preparation tonight. This is set your mind up. Okay? It's called Shenyin. Is it Shenyin?
Shenyin.
Tensu.
Shenyin.
Tensu. And this is kind of obvious, but I think we miss it sometimes. Shenyin means, in Sanskrit, kalyana mitra, spiritual friend. And it means that if you want to learn a high practice, if you want to learn some very sacred practice, you need a teacher. You need a master, you see? And I think lots of people, we travel around constantly, we're in a different country every week, right? It gets kind of weird. You don't wake up, you get a country, you see? And we need lots of people. We need all kinds of very sincere people all over the world who want to know these things, and they want to practice these things. But they can't, and they're not doing it right. And then it's because they need to be a master. They don't have a master. They don't have someone who can really teach them. Like, even if you just do yoga asanas, if you're in the hands of a master, you know it. You know, like today we went to a class, very kindly gave us a class. And just the moment they touch you, you know a master touched you. You know, you just know. This person knows everything there is to teach you. You know, just from the first time you get the hands on you, you know it. And it's such a difference. We go to different yoga centers all over the world. Every time we're in a city, we go on the internet, we go to the nearest yoga center. We don't tell them who we are, we just take a class. And then, you know, many of them you go and you know you're not in the hands of a master. You know, like, they're actually doing something they want to hurt you, or they're just kind of wandering, or they don't really know what they're teaching. And really the first step in Mahamudra. You know, before you do the meditation, before you do the exercises, before you even think about it, it's always the same story. Whether you're talking to Hindu tradition or Buddhist tradition or Indian or that, it doesn't matter. The very first step is always the same. You must find a teacher who knows what's going on. You can't learn it without a master teacher. It's foolish to try to learn piano from someone who doesn't know piano. And you wouldn't do it, right? But in spiritual things, people go to anybody. There's some advertisers in the subway, they go to mass, they go, you know? And they don't have any idea if they're just qualified or pay properly or if they can help you or hurt you. We met a man this week. He said, I'm kind of stuck in my meditation, you know? And we said, okay, let me help you what meditation I do. And he told us his meditation to do. And then Victor Scott said, well, how long are you doing this meditation that you're stuck on? 30 years. He's been stuck for 30 years. You see, he met somebody 30 years ago, he got a little teaching, and then he's been stuck. He's been doing it for 30 years, and he's stuck, you see, for 30 years. You see, and that kind of stuff happens in spiritual things. So the first thing that this Pai can teach you is called Pai can teach Mahamudra. And then the second half of that is all I have to say tonight. And then I can run. Okay? You have to honor it. And that's very important to American people. You know? Teachers get paid. Teacher works for me. I laid down my 12 bucks for this yoga class. I own the teacher. You know? I got my hands over the IBK, you know? I still got 3 punches on from it. You know? They have to come out and teach me. You know? And if I don't realize you're good enough, I'm not going to be that awesome. You see what I mean? And we went to yoga class and said, the yoga teacher has to get up and say, I really want you to do the asana. I hope you'll do it this way, but if you're in trouble, if you don't feel comfortable, if you're wrong, don't you want, you know, no problem. You can stay or you can walk together, so we can have a call, we have a new water outside. You know, it's like this scene, you know, in the monastery, in the Tibetan monastery. I mean, I remember one of the first things that my Lama came to me, said to me, you know, I tell this funny story. He was taking English classes at Georgetown University. I was his driver. I drove into his class every day, I drove him home. And then we stayed together. And then in a Sri Lankan Buddhist monastery in Washington, D.C. So the first night he came home, he's got all his papers with him. I said, Rinpoche, what's that? I said, this is my homework. I said, oh, good. And he said, here, you can take it. And I said, well, why? He said, you're going to do it for me. You know? And I said, Rinpoche, you know, usually in America, the student has to do homework. And he looks at me, you know, and he says, I am your teacher. I'll never forget that. He was dead serious. He's like, you don't want to teach your teacher. You don't say no to it. Are you something wrong with you? You know? And he didn't know Americans at that time, he was disrespected at that. And he couldn't imagine that a person who was a student who asked someone to teach him something would say no to anything. And that, he got softer later, but all these people who met him, people come up to me, oh, good old kind Rinpoche, you know. That was after we got Americanized. After we found out, like the first time the students were left, he figured out he had to be like, oh, please, you know, do your meditation anymore. But it's too much slower, you know. So really, that's all I really remember that story, okay? To succeed at Mahamudra, to see everything that is around you, which is the fastest way to become an angel to serve other people. That's the only purpose of this meditation. It doesn't make you calm. It makes you more stressed, okay? It's not a calm to do it, it's hard to do it. You know, it's not easy to do it, it takes a lot of discipline. And the only reason to put up with all that is that you can take care of other people in an ultimate way. You can be the ultimate servant of other people. And that's what we really want to do. That's what we really want to do. Okay? So, you have to find proper training, and then you have to honor it and respect it properly. Otherwise, you can't succeed. You won't succeed. And it's very much difficult for many people to do that. But the results are unbelievable. The results are everything you ever dream of. And I have had that happen. Everything you ever dream of, everything has. You just have to have discipline, and you have to honor the practice. One last invitation, then we'll run away.
What?
She's going to stop there.
Yeah, it's better tomorrow.
Okay, good place to stop there. So, tomorrow we'll pick up again at the same place, and we'll be going to the actual theory of Austin practice. I think we'll stay a little bit late tomorrow, okay? So be ready for that. We'll take a longer break. We'll have a cupcake that we need to make tonight. And then we'll have a good time tomorrow, okay? Thank you for coming. Okay, we do have a prayer at the end where we give away the incarnate. Okay? So, if you know the prayer, please do it with us. If you don't know the prayer, imagine giving away the incarnate to all.